The fourth reading of Parshas Vayechi opens with Yaakov Avinu wishing to spill the beans. Chapter 49. We're getting very near the end of the book of Genesis. And now Father Jacob is preparing last will and testament. This is his final conversations with his children before he departs. Vayikra Yainkev El Bonov. Yaakov Avinu, Father Jacob, calls to his children. Vayoymer. He calls to them and he says, Hey Osfu, gather round. Va'agido lachem, and I will tell you, Eis Asher Yikro Eschem, what will befall you, what will happen to you, ba'achris hayomim, in the end of days. So the first question that we might ask is, why does it say Vayikra Yaakov El Banov? Yaakov called to his children. It simply should have said Vayikra Yaakov Livvanov. He called his children. Why did he call to his children? What's the El Banov? So this question is actually brought down in the Bereishis Rabba, in the Medrash. And the Medrash says that the word El Banov could also be vowelized instead of El with a segol. If you put a tsere, it becomes Kale, God's name. And the Bereishis Rabba says that what Yaakov was asking for was that God be with his children. So it's Vayikra Yaakov. Yaakov calls Kale Banov. God should be with his children. But of course, in Pshut Lashon Mikra, on a literal level, this makes no sense whatsoever. And Rashi doesn't say it. It is possible to say that from Rashi's perspective, Vayikra Yankov El Banov or Livanov does not necessarily create the case or the need for an added explanation. It can be read straightforwardly. Rashi's famous grandson, Rashbam, suggests that this indicates that Yaakov's children were not with him at the time. He had called for Joseph. He had called for Joseph's children, but the rest of his children were not there. So if they were there, Yaakov would call to them, but they weren't there. So he called for his children, meaning to his children. He called for them to come. And then when they came, Vayikra Yankev El Banov, he called his children to his bedside. And then, Vayomer, then he said, He osfu va'agida. Gather round and I will tell. In other words, the first Vayikra was not to his children at all. Vayikra Livvanov would have been he called out to his children. Hey kids, come a little closer. But then, of course, the words Vayomer, He osfu, would be superfluous. Yaakov is a very, very old man. He's not well. This is his final moments on planet Earth. How long could he, loud could he have screamed? So therefore, Vayikra doesn't actually mean the Yaakov called with his own voice. He sent for. He sent for his children, El Banov, and once he sent for his children, then he began to speak. It's also very possible that Rashi believes that's implicit. At any rate, Rashi does not comment at all. And Yaakov calls to his children, and he says to them, Hey Osfu, gather round, and after you will gather, Va'agida. Why doesn't he just say what he wants to say? Why don't we say, Vayomer? And he said, Agid Olochem, I will tell you. Instead it says, Hey Osfu. What's the up with the Hey Osfu? Why is there a need for this Asifa? Why is there a need for this gathering? So Rashi once again does not comment on the word Hey Osfu. He talks about the word Va'agida, but he doesn't say anything about Hey Osfu. In other words, from Rashi's perspective, Vayikra, which is the first verb, Yaakov's the first action Yaakov takes, his calls for his children, requires no elucidation. Vayomer, and he said, that's a verb for Yaakov. He said, Hey Osfu is a verb for them. He's telling them what to do. You should gather. It's the third verb in the Pasuk. And Rashi, once again, does not feel this needs any special elucidation. So the Targum Yonis in Ben Ezeel suggests something very, very interesting. This is also found in the Medrash Lekech Tov. That the word Aseifa or Asifa is related to the notion of purification. And the Medrash says like this, first purify yourselves, First, put yourselves into a higher state of consciousness. Purge your minds of any other thoughts. When you'll be really focused, really, you know, gather in, as if like, I need you to get into the moment. When you'll immerse yourself and prepare yourself for this moment, then I'll be able to tell you all the secrets of the future. I can spill the beans. Which is certainly not pshuto shel mikra, that asifa, hayasfa means gather round. To say that asifa is lashon asifa, and that it means to purify yourself or cleanse yourselves, remove other things from your mind, doesn't, it's not on a level of a simple pshat, it certainly isn't. The Medrash HaChefetz suggests that Yaakov wanted them to be on one page. He wanted them to be of one heart. He says he begged them, be belev echad. Obviously, we'll have different opinions. After all, we are Jewish. And everybody's going to go in different directions. But that's okay. As long as our heart's in the right place. He says your heart must be in the same place. If you all care about the same thing, then nobody will be able to touch you. So when we talk about Jewish unity, we don't really mean that everybody has to look at things exactly in the same fashion. We don't really mean that everybody has to agree. That's unreasonable. In general, ein deyaseim shavas, people don't have the same mind, are not of the same mind in general. And specifically, when we talk about Jewish people, everybody knows the famous idea, two Jews? Well, there's different opinions about this. Is it three opinions, or four opinions, or five opinions when you have two Jews? But the point would be that it's unreasonable for Yaakov to say, everybody should surrender their minds, and from this point onward, you all have to think alike. That makes no sense. That means surrendering individuality. That's a cult-like approach. And Judaism and cults have nothing to do with one another. Judaism has never been a cult, chas v'shalom. A cult discourages personal growth and development. And Judaism, especially Hasidus, encourages and inspires personal growth and development. What we can ask for is that everybody's heart should be in the same place. Everybody should care equally. So Yaakov says to him, I want you all to care. Your heart should be in the right place. And the Medrash HaChefetz goes on to say that if everybody's heart's in the right place, Ein koberia yecholu lachem. Nobody has anything on you. Nobody can lay a hand on you. But if our hearts are in different places, then we're in big trouble. Then we open ourselves to all kinds of chas v'shalom, weakness and attack and so on and so forth. The Kli Yakar says that this asifa is like, it's almost like saying huddle round me. So when the quarterback or the coach gets everybody in the team to huddle around him, what does he do that for? He's giving instructions. But he doesn't want the other team to hear the instructions. So a huddle round usually has the intimation of, I've got a secret to tell you. Here too, Yaakov Avinu says, let's huddle together. Come close. I'm telling you something which is secret. And the Kli Yakar, expanding on the words that we'll soon hear from Rashi, says, Bikesh legalis esaketz. He wants to reveal the appointed time, the secret of the future of tomorrow. Interestingly, the Emek Dover has a very unique approach here. He says, we see later that Yaakov blesses the children. And he says physical proximity makes a difference for the blessing. Physical proximity. He says the act of gathering round would make them more susceptible, if you will, or more appropriately poised to receive Hashem's blessings. And that's why he emphasizes Heyosfu, and then he goes on to the Agida. Of course, the problem with the words of the Emek Dover is that Yaakov doesn't even intend to bless them, according to Rashi. And in fact, he doesn't bless them in verse 1. What happens is in verse 2, after saying Heyosfu, he says, okay, Hikabtsu. Now gather round, or now huddle together. It's a different word. And we're going to soon see, Rashi tells us that's because Yaakov wanted to do one thing, but was prevented. And therefore, he chose to do something else. So that's where we're finally getting to Rashi now. Va'agida lachem, I will tell you, es asher yikra. What is this agida lachem? What does it mean? I'll tell you what's going to happen in the end of time. But here's the problem. He promised that he would tell them these secrets. What would happen in the end of time? But in fact, we don't find any secrets. We don't find any information about the end of time. There's no Nostradamus prophecies showing up here in these verses. His blessings. So hello, Yaakov said, I'm going to tell you what's happening in the end of time. And then in fact, he doesn't tell them what's happening in the end of time. There's a discrepancy.
Does the Torah allude to when Yaakov became aware of what would happen in the end of time? Like, is it just on his deathbed?
The Torah doesn't tell us about when he became aware. The Torah does tell us that he wanted to spill the beans. He wanted to share the information he had. When he might have obtained that information, we don't know. But from this point, Yaakov wants to share the message.
I have no idea how long he's been living with this.
We don't know. It's a good question. We don't know how long he's been living with this secret. But incidentally, he'll die with the secret because he never tells it. And Rashi notes the fact that later on, he never actually does anything like that. We don't find any verses like that. Says Rashi, Bikesh, indeed, Yaakov sought legalois es haketz to reveal the appointed time. And what happened? Benistalko mimenu shchina. Suddenly, the higher consciousness that he was privileged to enjoy is no longer with him. He didn't have the secret, maybe even. He began to say other things which are not about the Kates at all. And that's how we understand. Rashi doesn't even comment on verse 2 of Hikabtsu Vashimu, but the notion of Hikabtsu Vashimu is clearly something different than Heyasvu Vagida. So what happened to Heyasvu Vagida? Something happened. Yaakov realized he couldn't do this. He wanted to do this and then realized he couldn't do it. What exactly is this Kates? What is this Achras Hayomim? So Ramban says, without any question, that this is the coming of Mashiach. Yaakov wanted to reveal the coming of the Mashiach, the end. The Sifse Koyanim goes even further. He says Yaakov wanted to reveal the time of Tchias HaMesim, which incidentally, the Zohar suggests, might take place 4 decades after Mashiach comes. Although the Rebbe explains it doesn't have to be that way. That's a version of events. One possibility of how they will unfold. The Rebbe says it's possible that things will accelerate and happen with tremendous speed. But the Zohar says, simply, it's the simple approach. The plan A is 40 years later. At any rate, according to the Sifse Koyanim, that's what he wanted to reveal. However, you should know that there are other opinions. For example, the Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel says that this is not talking about an appointed time altogether on a national destiny level. This is talking about the reward of tzaddikim in the other world. This is talking about the punishment of the wicked in this world and how and what the afterlife looks like. Now, as a rule, Gan Eden is not something we understand. The reality of the next phase in our life is something that's beyond us. But Yaakov wanted to share those secrets. He wanted to tell him what heaven is like. But he doesn't do it. Doesn't do it. According to the Daz Zakenim,
is that consistent with the Midrash? Like it says, Bachri Dami Yamim. It sounds more like the destiny of the Jewish people.
It definitely sounds like the Achras Hayamim is speaking about the end of days. It definitely sounds that way. But the Daz Zakenim of Balei HaTosva says he wanted to tell them the end of Egypt's days, when they would leave Egypt, because they were going into Galut, Mitzrayim. And in fact, the Chizkuni emphasizes the fact that it doesn't just say Achrit Yamim, but says Achrit Hayamim, with a hey, the. So he says, what is the? Well, these are the days that already had been spoken of. Where has Mashiach been spoken of before?
Never.
Never. We never heard anything about Mashiach yet. What did we hear about?
Cults.
We heard about Abraham being told that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs.
Right.
So he says that would be the Hayamim, the days that have been spoken of, the epoch, the era of exile and of oppression. So he says, let me tell you the end game. Let me tell you the end game. So that kind of makes sense, but still, Achrit Hayamim
sounds
like the end of days. And of course we know about Mashiach, and surely Yaakov knew about Mashiach and his children knew about Mashiach. This is from the very beginning of creation, the purpose of The world's being brought into existence, so it's not really such a question. And surely, Achris HaYamim could be understood as the days of Mashiach, as we see, both the Ramban and the Sifsekrenim emphasize that must be the case. Of course, the question then becomes, if it was a good idea to reveal these secrets, why did God cause the Shekhinah to go away? And if it wasn't a good idea, what was Yaakov thinking? What's going on here? So let's take a look on page Shin Mem. And Simon Tezayim for the balance of this morning.
And the other question is, why would the Torah even mention it? Like, if Hashem
didn't, right.
Like,
it didn't happen, yeah. So what's the point? Right. So Yaakov wanted. So why is that relevant for us all these thousands of years later to know what Yaakov wanted to do and what he was prevented to do? Clearly, there must be a reason for us to know that Yaakov wanted to do this and didn't do it. What is that? The Mefarshim don't talk about it. Lucky for us, though, the Rebbe did. The Rebbe spoke about this many times. We're going to focus on but one of those ruminations. One of the times Rebbe spoke about this. And later this went into an edited talk. Okay, here it goes. Mavur b'mefarshim. Page Shin Mem. Page Shin Mem. It's explained in many of the Mefarshim, many of the commentaries. Shahasiba lakach, that the reason shebepoel legila Yaakov esakets, that Yaakov did not, in fact, reveal the appointed time. I mean, the Mefarshim don't talk about what we learn from this. But the Mefarshim say, why didn't he? Mipnei, because sheyimoshech nezek godol min yediyas haketz. This knowledge would not be edifying or helpful. Much to the contrary. It would exact a terrible toll. It would ravage the people of hope. Ki aderes hakeidmim, these early generations, hayoidim who would know, sha'agu'ula lo'itia b'yameim, that the redemption would not come in their time or era, they wouldn't ask for redemption. Why would they ask for redemption if you know it's not coming? So what would be the point? That's how they explain this. That's how the Kli Yarkor explains it. The Yafei Torah in his commentary in the Medrash alludes to this also. But the Rebbe says, okay, that actually makes sense. So what was Yaakov thinking? You answered one question by creating another question. You answered why Yaakov wouldn't do it, but then you provoked a bigger question. So why did he want to? Imam Namalul Gila Akats Ligrim Litat Shlilius, if knowing the appointed time would bring about such negativity, Madua Bike Shankiv Legalis Akates. Why in everyone do you want to reveal it? You know that when you rob people of hope, you've robbed them of everything. Gotta have a dream. Gotta have hope. Yeah. When people lose hope, they're in a bad way. So the Rebbe has a very, very interesting approach to this entire subject, this whole little narrative. And he bases his approach on the words of the Zohar. It's a statement of the Zohar, which is found in the third section on page 221. The Zohar says this. Ilu zachu Yisrael, had we merited, hoisaboh ha-geula ha-shleima kvar be'es yitzias Mitzrayim. The Zohar essentially says that the exodus from Egypt could also have been the Mashiach moment. The Egyptian exodus could have been the final redemption. V'lehoisa acharei ha-golos nesefes, there wouldn't have to be another exile. This could have been the end. Imagine that. How much sorrow and suffering, how much trial and travail could have been avoided. And this actually helps us understand the different approaches in Achris HaYomim, that maybe the opinions aren't as disparate as they seem. They seem to be two very different opinions. If it's referring to the coming of Mashiach, like Ramban says, or it's referring to the leaving of Mitzrayim, like Chizkuni says. But the Rebbe is suggesting that based on the Zohar, they're not really mutually exclusive. leaving Mitzrayim could have been the coming of Mashiach. Yankiv Ratzel Legalis Laban of Uvdezu Atzma. Yaakov Avinu wanted to convey this to his children. He wanted to say, do you realize the opportunity that's at hand? You can get thousands of years of Jewish history taken care of now. All kinds of challenges. We can get this taken care of in the next few hundred years. In the next two centuries, we can live for three millennia. Take care of all the problems and issues and bring the football home. We can score the goal. And why would Yaakov say this? Matarasi begilui zeh, his intention at this revelation would be la'oyderaisam, to inspire them, lishmer al matzavim aruchni, guard your spiritual station. Ensure that you don't slip and trip. Make sure to stay on the money. Keep your eyes on the prize. So that the redemption would actually be, the Exodus would be the redemption. All right, that sounds great. So why did Hashem say not to do it then? In other words, if this could have been an inspiration that the Jewish people shouldn't have assimilated back in Egypt, which they did, if only they would have stayed in the straight and narrow and done what they had to do, his world history would have been very different. So why didn't Yaakov say that? Why didn't he tell it to them? Why did God prevent him? Even though, according to this opinion, which is the opinion, really, like we said, of many Mefarshim, that we're talking about the end of the Egyptian exile, which is two centuries away, because they spent 210 years, and now we're 17 years into that 210. So we've just subtracted 7 years from two centuries. You're still talking about 93 years. There would be no concern that the present generation would loosen their grip on doing the right thing. You know why? Because it's not relevant for us anyway. Because the truth is, people can look ahead into the future. You can feel that what will happen now will affect us in 100 years or maybe even in 200 years. You tell people what will be in 2,000 years, they look like you're crazy. They tell a story, there was a fellow came to a retirement home, and he was talking, he was a scientist, giving a whole presentation about global warming, or global colding, whatever you want to call it. And he said that within 20 billion years, there will be nothing left in the universe. And one older gentleman got very agitated. I saw he said 20 million years. He said, 20 billion years? He said, no, not 20 million, 20 billion. He said, oh, Baruch Hashem, 20 billion. But the truth is that, 200 years, you can look 200 years ahead. You can feel a sense of responsibility now for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe even 10 generations. You can feel that destiny. You can feel that we're fighting for a Jewish tomorrow, and that what will happen in 100 years from now? 200 years is not that long ago. And in saying this then, Yaakov could inspire the people that they should have lived better, and they should have ensured that they wouldn't assimilate. Okay, so why did God stop him? The Rebbe says a very interesting thing. Because if Yaakov would have given this information, and the people would have responded to the challenge based on that information, it would have been artificial. It wouldn't have been their real efforts. It's like insider trading. You didn't really achieve this. You knew too much. So God says, no. I want the Jewish people to do this on their own. And what was Yaakov thinking? Yaakov says, so they won't do it on their own. At least Mashiach will come. At least good things will happen. But Hashem says to us that He wants to bring us the greatest of goodness. And the greatest of goodness has everything to do with the efforts we make. So in the end, this is all about a lesson about efforts. It's a lesson about getting a head start, getting secret information, becoming privy to the secrets of tomorrow in order to better function today, and the Torah reminding us that you got to work for it. That in the end, to accomplish things through the uncovering of secrets or the use of what we call magic, in the end, that's not the way Hashem wants our Avedis Hashem to go. But now we've arrived. We've earned it. the hard way. So now we have to hope that Mashiach finally comes and brings the curtain down on the Golos once and for all. One of the best.